In the quick glimpse Brunn caught of the street when she and the babies were transferred to the nursery, she could not distinguish any landmarks. It was a chill, raw day. She shivered in the wind that whipped down the street. She was put in the back of the same kind of closed ground car, where she could see nothing of her route, and driven some incalculable distance with four definite turns. The front of the nursery looked slightly more welcoming, with shuttered windows instead of blank stone overlooking the street. Brunn looked up to see the obvious plume of a shuttle launch in the distance.
Eyes down!
The driver slapped at her head, but she exulted. She knew now where the spaceport was, or at least what direction.
Come inside, out of the cold!
Inside, Brunn could hear women's voices in the distance.
Women's voices?
The matron led her to a room large enough for a bed, two cribs, and a low, wide chair with a leg rest that was obviously intended for nursing. She had a small closet, a chest, and the inevitable sewing basket was on a bedside table. The matron helped her settle the babies in their cribs, helped her make the bed, and then led Brunn off to show her the house. An upstairs sewing room had rear-facing windows that looked out on a long, walled garden full of fruit trees. A few apples hung from some of them. Beyond the wall, Brunn tried not to stare, told herself she would have time to look later. Beyond the wall, she could see a street and the buildings across it. And beyond, more buildings, open land, rough fields, and distant hills. The women in the nursery had slightly more freedom. They were encouraged to walk out in the orchard, as well as do the housework and cooking. Not all the women were muted either. They had come, Brunn learned, from other maternity homes or from private homes. Servant women whose children would be reared elsewhere when they returned to their duties. The women who supervised them inspected the babies and mothers daily for cleanliness and any sign of illness, and supervised the preparation of household chores and cooking, but otherwise treated their charges with pleasant firmness. The muted women had perhaps less pleasantness and more firmness, but no active unkindness. They continued to teach Brunn the skills they thought all women should have. Brunn had not known that such things were possible, but she watched the other women produce socks and gloves and mittens from several wooden sticks and balls of fuzzy yarn. She was handed a pair of sticks and shown, over and over, how to cast on, how to knit a plain stitch. It was the most boring thing she'd ever done. The same little movement of the hand over and over and over. Even worse than sewing seams. Then they handed her another stick and taught her to knit a tube. Something clicked in her mind. This sort of thing, done with finer yarn and on a machine, made some of the things she'd worn. Sweaters, for instance. Three tubes sewn together. Stockings, leggings, tubular knits. It was interesting in an intellectual way, one of the few things that was. It got colder and Brunn shivered. The other women, warm in their knitted shawls and sweaters, shook their heads at her.
You better work faster. You'll be cold if you have no winter clothes.
In winter, they explained, they wore long knitted stockings under their skirts, held up with a peculiar arrangement of straps and buttons. The stockinged feet did not break the rules against shoes because they were not hard-bottomed. In households, some women even wore backless clogs in wet or snowy weather if they needed to go to market. But here, they would not. Here also, Brunn was formally introduced to the beliefs of her captors. They assumed that outlanders had no morals and no beliefs worth mentioning. So they began with the basics, as Brunn assumed children were taught. God, a supernatural being who had created the universe. Man, the glory of creation. Woman, created to be man's comfort and help. Evil powers, rebellious against God, who tempted woman to usurp man's position. For once, muteness had its utility. Brunn could not be made to recite the rules and rituals as the other women did, and they clearly feared contamination by anything a heathen abomination, such as a registered embryo, might commit to paper, or due to a book she read from. She was not allowed to read or write anything at all. They could not test her memory or her understanding. But she had an excellent memory. She could not hear the same words over and over without storing them away. If in fact you believed that women had been created as men's servants and comfort, then anything women did which was not serving men would clearly be wrong. And this was not something women could determine. Only God could make the rules, and only men could interpret them. It all made sense, except that it was ridiculous, like the ridiculous logic of paranoia. The notion that she was not as much a person as, say, her brothers was absurd. She knew that. She knew how to demonstrate that, if only she could have explained. But she was mute, all her knowledge and intelligence locked away. In her world, in the world she knew, the individual's voice was honored. She remembered Cecilia's struggles and the many who had helped her. Here, no one thought an abomination had anything useful to say. As long as she could understand and obey, that was enough. She ached, burned, to free this world's women, to show them that they were as human as men. In her mind, in the dark hours, she made all the speeches, wrote all the lectures, proved over and over and over again to an audience of shadows what she could never say. In the daytime, Brunn forced herself to walk on the gritty paths, toughening her feet as well as her legs, whenever exercise was permitted. She walked in all weathers, even when frost and snow numbed her to the knees before she was halfway to the first trees. The twins weighed her down, but she thought of them like the heavy packs in training. Additional strength would come from lugging them around. She would be stronger sooner and more able to escape. Twice a day, she walked the length of the orchard and back. Soon, she could walk farther, in the lengthening days that must mean a warmer season was coming. She even welcomed the hard work of mopping and cleaning as she felt herself growing stronger. In the evenings, in her room, she attempted the exercises that had once come so easily. At first, she worried that they would notice and forbid them, but no one commented. Other women, too, she discovered, did exercises to tighten their slack bellies to recover flexibility. In the darkest times, she practiced the swift movements of unarmed combat, only two or three strokes each time in case of observation, but a little every day. She matched hands and feet against each other, the quietest way she could think to achieve the hardening she needed for a killing stroke. The showings, where proven breeders were displayed for men who might choose them next time, were less humiliation than she'd expected, and more worrying. In the showings, she did her best to look exhausted, weak, helpless, broken. It wasn't hard to look tired. She pushed herself to shaky exhaustion every day. But she could feel the muscle building on her legs again, in her arms, in her abdomen. She hoped they would believe that came from carrying the babies, from walking in the orchard, from the simple exercises the others did. But they could not expect what she intended to do with the muscles she built with such effort. Eyes squeezed shut, she reminded herself which basic moves would build the strength and speed she needed for killing. The babies were moving from creeping to rocking on their hands and knees when a new mother arrived at the nursery. She was very young and had a slightly dazed expression. The other women spoke to her in short, simple sentences, a little louder than usual. Brunn wondered if she'd been drugged, though she had seen no evidence that women were given drugs. On the third day, he approached Brunn.
"You're the yellow hair from the stars?"
Brunn nodded. Up close, she decided that it wasn't drugs, but some innate problem that gave the girl that odd expression and halting speech, and the social unawareness that let her approach the unapproachable.
"You traveled with another girl, more my size and two brats?"
Brunn nodded again.
"She said you was nice. She liked you, she said."
Brunn looked hard at the girl. She had to be talking about Hazel.
"Where did she see Hazel?"
"She's doing fine. I just thought you'd like to know."
The girl smiled past Brunn's shoulder and wandered off, leaving Brunn tethered to the twins.
"Hazel is all right. And that girl left wherever Hazel was to go to maternity, or is Hazel in maternity?"
Brunn shook her head. She could not keep track of time. It was hot or it was cold, daylight or dark, that was all she knew. But Hazel was all right, less time ago than Brunn knew for sure. If only she knew where. Several days passed before the girl sat down beside her again to nurse her baby.
They call her Patience now. It's a good name for her because she never makes trouble. She's real quiet and works hard. Prima says they'll be able to marry her as a third wife for sure. Maybe even second, even though she can't sew good. They've been training her for Market Girl, and she goes there by herself now.
By now, Brunn was sure the girl was retarded. No one would let her go out alone for other reasons than the restrictions on women.
But she doesn't have your yellow hair, and she won't talk about the stars because Prima said not to.
Brunn could have strangled her for having a voice and not saying what Brunn really needed to know. She picked up a twin and removed from his mouth the pebble he'd put there. She could not feel any affection for them, but she wasn't about to let a child, any child, choke to death. The girl petted her own child.
She don't look big enough to have babies, though, and her blood's not regular yet. The master says...
One of the women in charge came by and tapped the girl on the head.
Hush, you! You're not here to gossip about what your master says. You want your tongue pulled.
The girl's mouth snapped shut, and she clambered out of the chair, holding her baby to her. The woman shook her head at Brunn.
She's simple, she is. Can't remember from day to day what the rules are, poor thing. We have to keep an eye on her, so she don't get herself in trouble. She gets in the habit of talking about her master here, even to you. She might do it back at her house, and then they'd have to punish her. Best nip it in the bud.
She patted Brunn's head, almost affectionately.
That is purty hair, though. Might win you a chance at wifing when you're born your three. Just you give me a nod if the girl starts talking about men's doings again. Like a good girl, huh?
Brunn nodded. As long as they'd let the girl talk to her.